Hi, my name is Sunita. I'm a second-year PhD student, and my research is looking at frailty.
Hi, I'm Philip Newton. I'm a senior lecturer at the Centre for Cardiovascular and Chronic Care in the Faculty of Health at UTS.
I understand there's a lot of different definitions for frailty. What are they?
So there are a fair few definitions, and there's no consensus on which one is right. The first one is by Freed. That was conceptualized in 2001, and since then it's been adapted a number of times to suit different clinical settings. It basically measures five aspects of physical limitations, the first of which is exhaustion, slowness, physical inactivity, weakness, and loss of appetite. The second one is by Rockwood. This one is quite comprehensive. It measures about 70 domains across psychological and social aspects, physical aspects. This one isn't as robust for a clinical setting, which is why in our research we go with Freed's.
I guess it kind of reminds me of an elderly person.
Frail.
Yeah, frail.
Absolutely.
Exhausted, that sort of thing. But I'm guessing we're seeing this in people who you typically wouldn't be considered frail because of age, is that?
Yeah, so when people think of frailty, they think of the elderly woman who falls on the street, which is true. I mean, frailty is associated with an increasing age. However, there are younger frail patients, and it's really a measure of vulnerability. So you can have young vulnerable patients, young vulnerable frail patients, and you can have older frail patients as well as older robust patients. So it's a measure of vulnerability.
Right. So is there a cause of frailty?
There's not a single cause because frailty is this complex syndrome that's multifactorial. So there's, you know, as Sunita said earlier, there's lots of things. There's a physical side of frailty and each of those have their own unique causes. But there's also other areas that people are moving into, our group included, about not just looking at the physical but looking at psychosocial and the cognitive decline as well. So there's no single cause of the frailty.
You mentioned the two definitions of frailty.
Yes.
So one is clinically better than the other. Was the Freed clinically better?
They're both clinically validated. The Freed is more clinically appropriate for a cardiovascular population, and it's been adapted to improve that clinical feasibility in a heart failure population.
And that's where you are looking at, isn't it? The heart failure population.
Yes. Yeah.
So how does frailty apply to that population?
So heart failure typically occurs in the elderly. So heart failure is really end-stage heart disease. So it typically occurs in the elderly population. But Sunita and I do a lot of work at St Vincent's, which is the heart transplant centre in New South Wales. So their population's a bit unique. They do get a lot younger patients. So these can be patients in their 20s, 30s, 40s and 50s who are being considered for a heart transplant. And we do see there are quite a high level of frailty in these patients, as well as your typical heart failure in the elderly population as well.
In the heart failure patients, what sort of characteristics are we seeing there that make them frail? Is it a result of having the heart disease?
That's something that's hard to measure. So we know that if you have heart failure, you're at increased risk of being frail. And if you're frail, you've got increased risk of having heart failure.
So it's what came first, the chicken or the egg?
So there's probably a contribution of both to each other. So we're not sure. There's certainly, you know, we know if you're frail, you're at increased risk. But we're not sure. The causality is a bit difficult.
Is the frailty you see in chronic heart failure a different type of frailty that you see to other diseases?
Well, yes and no. So there's elements of frailty that you can get in the general population that a heart failure patient will have. But the type of frailty these heart failure patients has is exacerbated by the heart failure itself. So there's an amenable element to that frailty.
So frailty and heart, so as we've said, frailty and heart failure are very much linked. There's a lot of similar pathophysiological pathways that occur in both conditions. Frailty in other conditions, I think the way it manifests itself is going to be very similar. And so those domains that we've talked about earlier will be the same across the different conditions. But the causes and the physiological pathways may be slightly different across different conditions.
So why do we care about frailty? Why is this such a hot topic at the moment?
Because the data is showing that if you're frail, you're going to have worse outcomes. You're going to be more likely to be rehospitalised, to have worse outcomes in terms of falls, delirium, and also to die. And so it is certainly something that's important to measure and then intervene within that frailty. Also, healthcare is advancing. There's a lot of new technologies coming in. Treatments that previously did not exist are now becoming available for increasing populations. And so from trying to identify the patients who are going to do the best is important. And both from the patient's perspective, obviously trying to improve their outcomes from them, but also from an economic perspective as well, because these new interventions and devices that are coming on the market are really quite expensive. So you want to be making sure that you're identifying the most appropriate patients for these interventions.
This has something to do with when you actually give someone a heart transplant, doesn't it? If someone's more frail, are they likely to do worse than someone who's less frail when they receive the transplant?
Yeah, so this is what I'm doing for my PhD at the moment. And the answer is we don't know yet. So what we have found is that if you are frail, you do have worse outcomes. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they don't then receive a transplant. Like, we don't know if they should or shouldn't be listed if they are frail.
So for argument's sake, you could be the most frail person in the hospital, but you get a super healthy heart and you end up having good outcomes. Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah, so again, we haven't reached that stage of being able to unravel what it means to be frail post-transplant. So we know that on the whole, they have worse outcomes, but there may be a small population that actually has a really good outcomes post-transplant if they are frail. But because we're at the beginning, we can't really figure out who these patients are yet, and we're sort of trying to find out who we're trying to characterise them at this point.
For example, if you do work out the population that does the best with transplants, is there a risk that a population is going to be left behind because they're going to be seen as less viable to receive a transplant?
Yeah. But these patients are also at risk, so it's their decision as well. Do they want to go forward knowing that they're at a higher risk of dying or being rehospitalised or going to rejection? Or it's information for them as well.
And the other thing, the transplant population is really unique. In Australia, we only do about 70 to 80 heart transplants a year.
72 to 80?
Yep, across the entire country. And so
that's amazingly low.
Yes. And so the decisions around who gets allocated a heart is really complex, and you want to make sure that the person you do allocate the heart to is going to have the best chance of long-term survival.
Mm. At the moment, how do you make that decision with who gets the heart?
So, as I said, that's not our decision. That's a really complex decision. There's a whole range of clinicians who are involved in that decision-making. There's clear protocols around that. And frailty is something that is being considered to be incorporated into that decision-making process. At the moment, it's not, because the work's not there, as we've talked about previously, but it could be in the future incorporated into that complex decision-making.
Yeah, so it wouldn't be a frail or not frail transplant or no transplant. It's that information on top of all the existing information.
Can a patient do anything to reduce their frailty?
So there have certainly been studies out there that showed if you can increase your physical activity, physical strength, improve your nutrition, improve the cognition abilities within that, and reduce polypharmacy, so trying to reduce the amount of medications patients take, that can improve their frailty. Within the work we've been doing, we haven't yet looked at can we intervene on that when we identify patients as being frail, and will that improve their outcomes post-transplant or implantation of a cardiac device? That's certainly work our group will do in the future. But yeah, studies have shown that if you can improve physical activity, physical strength, nutrition, etc., you will improve their frailty.